Welcome back in, everyone, to a fantastic new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so excited to be joined by our guest today and to be talking about their incredible show, which is just now sold out. So get the tickets when you can. We are joined today by director Lily Cantor-Riopel, whose show, being presented by Apartment Tennessee Productions, is The Slow Dance. It's playing now through March 23rd at 59 E59 Theaters, though currently is sold out. But if you can get them, tickets and more information are available at 59E59.org. We had the privilege of seeing this show last week, and it was stunning, absolutely wonderful. So we are so excited to have our guest with us today to talk more about it. And with that, let us welcome on our guest, Lily. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
I am so excited to have you here. I'm so excited to be talking about your show. It really was just fabulous. It was a great heartfelt comedy. So that is so fabulous. Why don't we start by having you tell our listeners a little bit about what The Slow Dance is about?
Sure. So The Slow Dance is a new play, and it's about a mother and son who are at a crossroads. She's made a rather impulsive decision to move out of the family home, and he has just recently gotten engaged to a woman that she has never met. And so we join them at this sort of emotionally heightened moment in their relationship and follow them through as they figure out a new way to relate to each other for the rest of their lives. So it follows the mother, the son, his fiance, and the professional organizer that the fiance brings in to help the mother pack and move out of the home she's lived in for decades. And then there's one other character who is a bear, a character from the son's favorite childhood book, who appears sort of mysteriously, and we spend the play trying to sort of understand what the bear might mean, discovering different meanings in the bear's character, and we follow them through to the end of the play to a new kind of sweet resolution, hopefully with a little bit of a sense that they will be relating to each other more easily and as a closer family than when we joined them at the beginning of the play.
Yes, that's so wonderful. How did you come upon this piece?
So I received the play in the summer of 2019. Lisi, the playwright, sent it to me. A mutual friend of ours thought that I might be a good fit for the play, and I read it. And I was sort of immediately gripped by it, in particular by the bear. You know, when I'm reading a play, I tend to be attracted to plays that have something a little strange and mysterious about them. And I really love plays that take something about the kind of interior emotional experience of being a person and render them in exterior theatrical ways for an audience to experience. And so as soon as I turned the page and got to the point where the bear appears, I was just on board. I was like, I have to direct this play. I don't totally know what the bear means yet, but I don't care. I'm just smitten with the whole idea of this sort of strange symbol injecting itself into the middle of the action, and I'm on board. So I read the play in 2019. Lisi and I immediately met, and it felt like a charmed collaboration right from the start. We discovered that we had gone to the same high school in, you know, different years, we're different ages. So we didn't know that we had sort of had very similar upbringings in a way, came from a similar place. And so right away, we just really locked in, enjoyed each other's company, and felt that we would be good collaborators. And so we started working on the play then and have been working on it ever since.
Wonderful. Now, with the production already being up on its feet, rolling, if you will, what was it like developing it?
It was really fascinating. I mean, I think Lisi's writing is very economical. She leaves a lot of space for inference and for directorial imagination. The play is like 102 pages and it reads at around 72 minutes. So you can get a sense just from that of like how much space there is in the work for collaborators to be diving in and trying to understand what's happening beneath the surface. And so a lot of our work was a process of me sort of reflecting to her how I was experiencing the play and always asking, like, is this the experience you want? You know, I'm often, when I'm working with a playwright, I like to think in terms of productive mystery, like what is the thing that's unknown that helps an audience to lean in and to wonder what's going to happen next versus the kinds of mystery that maybe we can let go of? Like, do we want the audience to be wondering, you know, in this play, for example, when we join Sun at the beginning of the play, he's in a really emotionally heightened state. And in previous drafts of the play, it wasn't clear why is he so combustible right out of the gate? And over the course of developing the play, we discovered that's maybe not the most productive mystery. We don't want audiences to be sitting in the first scene wondering, why is he so emotionally combustible? We want them to know right out of the gate so that they can empathize with him and be on his team. And so we decided, okay, he's in the throes of grief. We discovered that later in the play in a previous draft. And so in developing it, we decided, you know what, let's just pull that right into the first scene and just make that a known right at the beginning so that we're not leaving audiences to wonder about that because we have other things we really want them to be wondering about. And so over the course of readings and workshops, we did a lot of that kind of work, sort of discovering what should be revealed when to give the best emotional experience to the audience. And then of course, the biggest challenge in developing this play is that the bear is an entirely nonverbal character. And so we did a reading and a workshop, you know, split apart by several years. And in both of those instances, we didn't have a character playing the bear because when you're sitting around a table, there's not that much that an actor in a non-speaking, entirely physical role could do. And so we kind of knew that in the development of the piece, we were only going to be able to get so far with the bear until we got everybody in the room for a production. And so we sort of just accepted at these earlier stages, the bear is going to function more like a symbol. We can understand in broad strokes theatrically what the bear means possibly to Sun. Why is it that the bear appears when it appears? But we knew that we weren't really going to understand the specificity of the bear as a character until we got into the room. And it took even a little while once we were in rehearsal to fully make that shift. There came a point in rehearsal where, and it's so obvious in retrospect, but there came a moment where I just said, okay, we have to stop treating the bear like a symbol and start treating the bear like a character. So we need to start thinking about the bear's thought process, the bear's emotions, who is the bear in each of these scenes when they appear. And so that was like the biggest chunk of development that had to actually wait until we got into rehearsal for a production, which was exciting. You know, as a director, we like to do so much preparation ahead of time, but there is something really thrilling about knowing that there's an entire exciting thing in the play that you just can't really prepare for. You're going to have to get in and figure it out live, so to speak, with your collaborators. And so that was some of the work in the rehearsal process that I thought was like the most exhilarating in terms of our collaboration. We all had to figure out together what we thought it was going to be. And it went through so many iterations and I'm so happy with where we ended up.
That is fantastic. Is there a message or a thought you were hoping the audiences take away from the piece?
Yeah, I think it's more of a feeling than a thought. I guess I'm hoping that people who come to see this play, who for whatever reason have a kind of uneasy relationship with their loved ones, with their family members, or with chosen family, I'm hoping that they might leave feeling a little bit more hope and possibility about how those uneasy relationships might transform. That's, I think, the main thing that I'm wanting people to walk away with is that feeling of hope and optimism about where their relationships might go from here.
Oh, that's lovely. I love that. And I think that message is definitely coming through wholeheartedly in this show.
Thanks.
My final question for this first part is, who do you hope have access to the slow dance?
Yeah, I mean, it was really important to me when we were thinking about where the play would premiere, that it premiered at a place with a real intergenerational audience. Because the play is about an intergenerational relationship between a mother and son, I really wanted it to happen in a place where the audience could look like both sides of that relationship, where it wasn't a foregone conclusion that the audience would identify more with one of those characters than with the other. And so I'm super pumped that we ended up at 50-90-59 because they do have a really diverse, in terms of age in particular, subscriber base. They have people who are my age all the way up to many, many decades older than me. And so it's been so exciting to watch the play in an audience like that, where you can look around and see sort of every different character in the play reflected out in the house. Yeah.
The second part of our interviews, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I would love to start by asking you our regular first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites?
Well, I grew up experiencing a lot of musical theater. I'm from New York City. My family went to the theater a lot, and I saw a lot of musicals as a kid. And they were definitely the thing that first hooked me. And in particular, I was really interested in Sondheim musicals. And I think what I particularly loved about his work was that the form of his music and the content that he's exploring are always so deeply intertwined. And I think when I was a little kid, I didn't necessarily have the intellectual ability to identify that I thought that was really exciting. But as I grew into an artist in my own right, that has continued to be a characteristic in all of the work that I am really attracted to. So, like, for example, I would say one of the plays that's had the greatest influence on me is Mr. Burns, which is such an incredible marriage of form and content. It's a play about the resilience of the human spirit against all kinds of really catastrophe and disaster. And the play in its form is a kind of argument for that resilience, because it shows us how these little seeds of culture can be sort of nurtured and recycled and rebirthed into new forms, new cultural forms over the course of many generations. And so I would say, like, a lot of the work that I'm really interested in does cool stuff like that, of knitting together the form and the content to make a really visceral argument for whatever it's trying to say.
Lovely. I love that list. I know you've been very busy with Slow Dance, but have you had an opportunity to see any great theater lately you might be able to recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I have seen a lot of really great theater recently, some of which has since closed. I will just shout out I Love You So Much I Could Die by Mona Pierneau, which is another great example of a play whose form and content were like holding hands like this at New York Theater Workshop, which I thought was just gorgeous. In terms of things that are still running, I'm super excited that Stereophonic has moved from Playwrights Horizons to Broadway. I think it's just such a like richly detailed play. And I had such an immersive experience as an audience member, really just giving my attention to it for 3 hours and getting to know the characters, and the design of the play is so smart and the direction is so detailed and nuanced and everybody in it is amazing. And then the other play that I saw recently on Broadway that has now moved theaters for a commercial transfer is Appropriate, which I saw when it was at Second Stage and is, I just think, so great, so bold, so funny, so no holds barred. And I loved it.
Some wonderful, wonderful shows listed there. Several that are on our list of we have to go and see because of the rave review. And like you said, just the brilliance of them all. So that is a great, great list of suggestions. Thank you for those.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
Yeah, I mean, truly so many things. You know, it's kind of a joke in my family that I'm really bad at transitions. Like, I was always the kid who at the end of every school year would like weep at the last day of school because I was so sad to be leaving my classroom behind or my teacher behind or the friends who were in my particular math class that year, whatever it was. I get really attached to whatever I'm in. I think I have a sort of innate ability to kind of see what is special and beautiful and impermanent and worth nurturing about whatever context I'm in, that can make it very painful to let go of those things, which you just have to do as time moves on and life goes, you know, from one thing to the next. And so it kind of is like a funny thing that I ended up in the theater, because the theater is a constant process of getting extremely attached to plays and people and venues, and then knowing while you're working with them that it's going to be impermanent, and then having to have these really painful goodbyes every couple of months when you transition from one project to the next. And so weirdly, this thing that I was always terrible at as a kid and still find to be very emotionally torturous is also my favorite thing. I really love that the theater, that working in the theater, a life in the theater, is a sort of constant opportunity to practice saying goodbye to things, because I think it also forces a kind of appreciation for the present moment. It's given me so many opportunities to kind of like stop and acknowledge that this group of people who's come together to make this particular play at this moment in time in this theater is probably never going to get together again. We're never going to do it again. And if we ever do it again, it's not going to be exactly like this. And so it just gives me a constant opportunity to be in touch with like how special every specific thing is while it's happening, which has permeated even the parts of my life that are not in the theater. You know, it's a great way, it's a great lens on the impermanence of life, I think.
Delightful answer. I really love it. And a
Thanks.
good lean into my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
Yeah, I mean, it's so tough because I have so many. Because truly, I knew I wanted to work in the theater from the time I was a really young kid. And so part of what that means is that every time I do anything that sort of checks a box from my childhood, it's this sort of amazing moment of feeling like I'm giving my childhood self a gift. I think one thing that still stands out as being really special for me is right before theater shut down in 2020, I was working on the Broadway production of How I Learned to Drive. I was assistant directing that show, and it was my first Broadway show. We were in the rehearsal room for it when the pandemic happened. And so there was a lot of devastation about that experience sort of going up in smoke very suddenly with no forewarning. And the feeling of coming back to it 2 years later, we ultimately came back to the room in 2021, one or two, I don't remember when we came back into rehearsal, but 2 years later. And I just so clearly remember, one, the feeling of like returning to the rehearsal room. And that was one of those moments you never get, where it was the same group of people coming back to the same room, but 2 years later. So all transformed, but kind of doing the same thing. But also then the feeling of the first day in the Broadway house, in the Friedman. That was just such a special experience for me, having dreamed of working on a Broadway show when I was a little kid, and I would get out of school and I would go student rush a Broadway show and sort of get my head in the game and understand what the lay of the land was in the industry when I was really young. And so then to have that experience as an adult of like actually being a part of it myself, it felt like a real full circle moment, and one that I was so grateful to have, especially because I had spent 2 years really being sad and grieving the loss of that opportunity. So coming back to it just felt so exciting and special.
Oh, that is such a wonderful memory. I love that. Thank you for that. Are there any other productions or projects that you have coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Sure. So Lisi and I are actually just in the early stages of working on her next play. It's a new play. It's called Tell Me Something Good, which I think is such a good title. Thank you, Lisi, for giving your play an amazing title. And we're planning to workshop that over the summer. So I would say stay tuned. There may be a public component there that people who love this play can sort of follow along and catch Lisi's next one at an earlier stage of development, which might be exciting for them.
That is wonderful. I completely agree, by the way. What a great title for a play. I'm sitting here and I'm like, all right, so for the second interview that we're going to do, tell me more about, you know.
Yeah.
That is wonderful, and a good lead into my final question, which is, if our listeners would like more information about the Slow Dance or about you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Sure. So if you Google me, if you Google Lily Cantor Riopelle, my website will probably pop up. It's also just lilyriopelle.com. And that is a good place to follow along with any projects I have coming up. I try to keep it updated so that people who want to know what I'm up to can find all the information there. And that's where you can find me.
Well, wonderful. Well, Lily, thank you so much for taking the time to stop by and just sharing and jawing about the amazing show you have. It really is spectacular. Congrats again on the sold out run, and congrats on all the success from this show. Really, you should be very proud of this piece. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been so fun chatting.
My guest today has been the incredible director of the piece we spoke about today, Lily Cantor Riopelle. She directed the piece being presented by Apartment 10C Productions entitled The Slow Dance. It's playing now through March 23rd at 59E59 Theaters and currently is sold out. But if you happen to be able to get tickets, you can get tickets and more information by visiting 59E59.org. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting in our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But right now, keep your eyes on the website, keep your eyes anywhere tickets might be available, because though it's sold out, you never know. And if you can get a ticket to the show, you are definitely going to want to see it. The show again is The Slow Dance, playing now through March 23rd. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.